Thank you for joining me again. My name is Dr. Joseph Aaron Diamond, and I am Assistant Professor of Neurology at the Icahn School of Medicine and Mount Sinai Health System. For this patient, what's the next step? The answer here is talk with psychiatry about changing the medications. A medication he might be taking which can cause this, which is venlafaxine, which is a selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. However, it does have some mixed properties, and it acts more like a selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor at doses of 150 or less. What would be a better medication to use in this patient? Possibly bupropion in the morning, but making sure it doesn't worsen his insomnia. And if not better after this, consider either a gabapentin or D3 type of dopamine agonist. So how did we get to this answer? So we're going to evaluate the patient with sleep disordered problems. We can actually sometimes look at certain lab chemistries, but these have to be tailored to the specific sleep disorder. Underlying metabolic disorders can actually sometimes cause sleep symptoms in and of themselves. So some things we might screen for in sleep disorder breathing, you might want to look at CBC or looking at thyroid stimulating hormone, TSH. And insomnia, you can consider checking TSH as well as B12 or folate. And restless leg syndromes, you can look at a CBC, CMP, looking at liver enzymes, ferritin to see if that's low, as well as additional iron studies, hemoglobin A1C to look at the presence of diabetes, vitamin B12 folate, vitamin D, as well as a TSH. And consider peripheral neuropathy labs or EMG nerve conduction study, which can sometimes detect disorders of the peripheral nervous system. In narcolepsy, again, you might want to look at TSH, B12, and consider a lumbar puncture to check for orexin or hypocretin levels, which is a hormone that can regulate the ability to stay awake and to be in the sleep state. It generally moves the sleep switch in the sleep-wake cycle. It stabilizes it and keeps it on in certain areas. So those with narcolepsy actually have a deficiency in this, and that can lead to dysregulated sleep as well as dysregulated wake as a result of that. As well as neuroimaging with a CT or MRI of the head on a case-by-case basis. And that would be to evaluate for strokes, spinal cord searing, Arnold Chiari malformations, or even demyelinating lesions that might be indicative of multiple sclerosis or related disorder. So medications involved with sleep disorder breathing or restless leg syndrome, these can help, but they can also even precipitate or harm certain problems. So sometimes those with obstructive sleep apnea might have an issue using CPAP. So one thing you can even try to help these patients out would be Flonase or another nasal spray to reduce the secretions with that. Restless leg syndrome. The dopamine D3 particular agonists, such as pramipexole, known as Mirapex, or ropinirole, known as Requip, are thought of as a first line for this. But you need to be aware of the side effects, such as impulse control behaviors, drowsiness, nausea, vomiting, or augmentation, which is a particular effect in which the medication actually worsens symptoms by making them come on earlier throughout the day. They might spread, such as from your legs to your arms, and they might become more severe and more refractory to treatment. And the treatment for this is not actually escalated the dose higher and higher of those medications, which will worsen the augmentation, but it's to lower it to a minimally accepted dose or get them off the medication entirely, let it wash out, and then retry to a titration and or use other medications, which we might go over. Gabapentin can sometimes help with restless leg syndrome, as well as pregabalin, some benzodiazepines, particularly the clonazepam. Opioids are known to help some of these patients, such as tramadol, morphine, fentanyl, or even refractory cases that don't respond to other treatments, methadone. But it's important to always replace iron and vitamin deficiencies first, as unless that's addressed, the underlying problem is going to be untreated and their symptoms will generally not respond as well to treatments. Make sure antidepressants are well controlled for, as all can cause restless leg syndrome except for bupropion, which is known by its trade name Wellbutrin. So medications and insomnia. Melatonin can sometimes help as an immediate or sustained controlled release. So melatonin is interesting as it is a hormone that our pineal gland naturally secretes in the presence of cool temperatures and darkness, of which darkness, the absence of light, is a much larger role for the secretion of melatonin, which helps us align our circadian rhythms properly so that we can initiate and maintain sleep. So giving a little boost to that, if there might be some deficiency, can actually be important. However, we do know in order for any exogenous or endogenous melatonin that is present, in order for it to work properly, there does have to be an absence of light, particularly those with the blue light wavelengths. We have some other medications that can be used to treat insomnia, such as Zolpidem, Ambien, as well as some newer medications such as Suvorexant, Belsomra, which is a selective dual orexin receptor antagonist. Also, you might want to tailor this to comorbidities, such as if the patient has a headache, they might be a candidate for a tricyclic antidepressant to help these both together. Is there some depression? You might want to consider mirtazapine or trazodone. Is there any anxiety present? Then you might want to consider benzodiazepines, or any neuropathy, then you can consider tricyclic antidepressants or gabapentin. Again, make sure the medications are not causing it, such as bupropion, which is an activating antidepressant, as well as duloxetine, which is another selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor, venlafaxine, which we talked about, and lamotrigine, which is an anticonvulsant medication, which can also be used for mood stabilizer, as well as some lipophilic beta blockers, such as metoprolol and propranolol. Some medications with other disorders, in narcolepsy, particularly that with cataplexy, a medication to consider would be sodium oxybate, known as Xyrem, which helps you to consolidate your sleep so you get better rest during the nighttime, so less of a need for your sleep to intrude during your daytime. Some selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which can actually decrease your body's propensity to generate REM sleep, as well as selective norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, which can do the same but have an activating effect, as well as some tricyclic antidepressants such as protriptyline, imipramine, and clomipramine. And then we can also address the excessive daytime sleepiness symptoms with such medications as modafinil or armodafinil, methylphenidate, known as Concerta or Ritalin, and some amphetamines such as dextroamphetamine or mixed amphetamines such as those in Adderall. REM behavior disorder, the medications to treat it oftentimes can be melatonin or clonazepam, and some other parasomnias such as those of inner sleepwalking, topiramate, known as Topamax, zonisamide, carbamazepine, and oxcarbazepine. So it's a lot of anticonvulsant medications which can have the dual effect to treat those parasomnias. And circadian rhythm disorders, which are generally treated by a combination of melatonin and light therapy. In addition, there can be some non-pharmacologic treatments. So in insomnia, in our earlier podcast, we talked about cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia to target the perpetuating factor of the 3P model, and is involved with assessing sleep hygiene, stimulus control, sleep restriction therapy, as well as relaxation therapies. Patients generally need at least 4 sessions for this to give them the maximal benefit, 4 or more, but is the best model for long-term success. And in sleep disorder breathing, some treatments we can use for that is continuous positive airway pressure or bilevel positive airway pressure, depending on their patient's respiratory status and breathing problems. Some mandibular advancement, which can be done with a device or, in certain situations, surgery. Even something like positional therapy, in which the patient is having the bulk of their apneic or hypopneic events when they're on their back or on a certain side, maybe moving them off their back or onto a different side can actually alleviate their symptoms. And generally, if they're refractory to other things, surgery, which is a few different techniques, can actually help to improve this. It is important to coordinate the care with other specialties, such as the primary care physician and neurologist, to see how is this impacting their headaches, hypertension, any cardiac dysrhythmias they might have, any disorders of the peripheral nervous system, any pulmonologist. So how is this impacting pulmonary disorders such as COPD or pulmonary fibrosis? Psychiatrist, how might this be impacting the patient's depression or anxiety? ENT, could nasal polyps potentially be contributing to this? And endocrinology, looking at thyroid disorders and diabetes mellitus, to name a few. So in summary, sleep problems are quite prevalent, and it's important that we need to be aware that they exist and they can affect every other organ system involved throughout the body. It's important to always rule in and rule out sleep disorder breathing first, as this can impact everything. Be aware of certain common vitamin deficiencies and metabolic stage, which can precipitate or worsen sleep problems. Always check to see if medications might be a cause of the patient's sleep problems. And don't be afraid to implement any non-pharmacologic sleep therapies, such as cognitive behavioral treatment for insomnia, positive airway pressure, or positional therapies. And when in doubt, send the patient to a sleep specialist for further evaluation. Thank you very much for joining me in this podcast series, and wish you all the best in treating your patients with sleep disorders.